Wahoo caters your Super Football party at the end of the year. The Wahoo Manhattan Pro Football Pick'em Challenge. Log on and win.
The News Radio KMAN. Nick McNamara here. For the first time on this side of In Focus, missing Brady, but life goes on. We're in studio here with Assistant Director of Community Development, Chad Bunger from the City of Manhattan. Chad, how you doing today?
I'm hanging in there. How about you?
Oh, I'm going all right.
Good.
Getting used to some things here.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm better on this side. Who knows? So we're going to be talking a little bit about the Labor Day flooding that happened in Wildcat Creek. It's been about 10 days now since that, I believe.
Yeah.
So first, let's just talk a little background on the flooding and, you know, just about a little bit about the rainfall that we saw and where it fell and everything that resulted from that.
There was a lot of rain, as we all know. Wildcat Creek's kind of one of those weird, uncontrolled creeks that we've found in the last several years that when we have several days of decent rain that saturates the ground, it always seems like one big rain comes and causes problems. This one was monumental. It was a monster storm. The reports I've seen, and I haven't had time to really dig into it, but the talk I've heard, reports I've seen, is anywhere from 9 to 11 inches of rain. Basically, the west side of the city of Manhattan all the way up into the rural Riley County areas, closer to Riley, Leonardville, Keats, those areas. It was a monster storm, all in 9 hours. And I've been struggling how to put this in perspective because I know, you know, the Wildcat Creek's about 100 square miles of area, and that's tough to wrap your brain around. And then just what 9 inches of rain looks like when it falls in a big chunk of that area. And I've struggled to figure out a decent way to explain how big that rain event was. And the only way I could do it is for Manhattan, we get on average 34 inches of rain a year. We got 9 to 11 inches, so that's almost a third, or that's a third of that rain. We got it in 9 to 10 hours. So it was dumping buckets, trash can loads of water in the watershed. You know, that never does good things when we get that much rain, no matter where it goes.
No, it doesn't. And I remember a city manager said it was at least an over – city manager Fear said it was at least an over 500-year event. Can you talk a little bit about your understanding of what that means? Or I could also explain it if you're not.
No, yep, I've got it. Or I can. We haven't got the official engineers and weather service and all those folks to give us a frequency on it. But it's probably going to be in that 500 or more range. I think in the newspaper I saw that Mary Knapp, the state climatologist, said something that was on the order of 1,000-year rainfall. That doesn't quite equate to the same when you talk about flood levels. The way the engineers and the way flood maps work and all that, they do it on an annual percent of chance. So a 100-year storm, that's an easy way to say how big that storm was. Technically, it's a 1% chance every year that rainstorm is going to be that big to cause that kind of flooding. And then once you get on from there, it's just all used to be all theoretical. Now it seems to be more and more realistic the reality that we get those bigger storms. So yeah, it's probably, it lines up with a lot of 500 year or that 0.2% annual chance flood line on our maps in some areas. So any way you shake it, it was a big storm.
And you mentioned those flood maps. I understand that those are kind of a recent, well, relatively recent thing, at least in the last 30, 40 years, that those maps were even available.
Yeah, so the City of Manhattan and Riley County started participating in the National Flood Insurance Program starting in 1980, I think officially 84. Before that, there were some advisory maps of some sorts out there, and we didn't get our official maps till 1984. And then we've had 3 or 4 other renditions of those since. Our latest ones we have were adopted in 2015. And they're probably the most advanced maps we've ever seen in terms of accuracy and the modeling. But even then, it's all they are really is a snapshot of when some elevation information is taken and when the engineers start plugging numbers in on how many roofs and roads and those kind of things. Culverts are all inputted. And so they're as good as they are at that day. They take that information, and then for a community like Manhattan who does develop, who does grow, they become somewhat outdated quickly. Other areas in the country, you know, where they haven't seen a new building permit for several years, they're probably pretty accurate. But for maps like Manhattan, they tend to lose their accuracy over time. And because of that, the maps we did in 2015 had a new feature for Manhattan and a large part of the country, is we modeled what the flood would be based on the growth of Manhattan and the area. So we took the FEMA model and all of its nuts and bolts, and then basically anything that was green grass, ranch, or farm, we looked at our comprehensive plan that says, all right, what's supposed to be there in the future in the next 10 to 15 years, and ran that stuff through. So if it was green grass today, we assumed it was going to be a rooftop and driveway and those kind of things, and kicked out a flood model from it, or the results, and put those on those flood maps. So it was supposed to be more for information. We took it to the next step and built some regulations around it to make sure people were high and dry for a current flood event as well as a future flood event. And then the storm caught up to us. So,
and you mentioned those maps are done pretty sparsely. They get done every like maybe 10 or so years,
yep.
I remember. And in regards to development, there's been a lot of questions and concerns of people regarding development and how that might have impacted
the water flow
in that event. And how would have that, you know, how much of that development was done more since those flood maps have been around?
I'm trying to think. We probably have not had, there was certainly very sparsely development within the floodplain area, the mapped floodplain area. There's obviously been a lot of development up on the upper edges of the hillside, both north and south of Wildcat Creek, that those areas generally flow into the creek's watershed, or that are in the watershed. So there's been a lot of development up there, but that was kind of the intent of that future conditions floodplain, is to kind of see what that future growth or what that growth will give us. I'll never say that development didn't have an impact, but as I started off with, this was a huge storm.
And I believe we have a caller. Caller, Great. Go ahead. You're on InFocus.
Yes. I recall a few years ago when you all applied for some money from the government to work along Wildcat Creek, do some buyouts, make some walking trails, and this and that, et cetera. And you asked for too much money. We got greedy, and they turned it down. Now, if we would have been reasonable and had that money, would that have helped in this 500-year flood? Now, if anyone can see ahead to a 500-year flood, they probably ought not be living in Manhattan. They'd be making big money somewhere else.
Yeah, you're right. If you could predict those kind of storms, you should be in Vegas or wherever.
Let me finish.
You bet.
I think somebody made a suggestion some years back. Let's put a dam right west of Blueville, and that's the only way we're going to control that creek. Or let's put some dams. Let's cooperate with Fort Riley and put some small dams up there, and then we can let it out as we need. I think that was a local person. And now we've paid some consultant, which, you know, a consultant is an expert, with a briefcase 50 miles from home, and they get big money for that. But anyway, that's what we're going to have to do. Now, we took Tuttle Creek out, the very best land in the whole United States, grow the crops, cattle along the valley, and a great area. We planned that in 1935. Finally, we got started filling in 1961. So let's just take Keats out and all that good farmland up there and then protect Wildcat Creek. Or let's don't develop along the creek. Think about one thing and I'll finish. The Indians were a lot smarter than us. They hunted in the valley and lived in the hills. We live in the valley in a flood zone and hunt in the hills. Talk with you later.
All right. So thanks for the comments and the questions. I'll push back a little bit on the notion that we got greedy on that grant. If you look at the communities that were awarded that, that were addressing flooding in watersheds our size or similar, those price tags of communities that were awarded were in the $75 to $100-$150 million range. That was quite the experience with HUD and the Rockefeller Foundation. You know, they had $1 billion of extra money from the Sandy hurricane in New York and New Jersey. And we were really given the direction to think big, to do some monumental changes, and that's what we did. And yeah, if we could have had that grant and bought those homes out and put the trails in and whatnot, I would not be talking about this thing today. Hopefully other fun project or something different that'd be more fun. But everything that was in that grant, we are talking about today in terms of buying out, in terms of building the same basins on Fort Riley. There really wasn't anything lavish. We weren't making anything out of gold or anything. The other comment about damming and build a big dam, you know, outside of town, just as you said, Tuttle Creek took a lot of farm ground out of production and put a lake there, which is a nice amenity for Manhattan, but there's still flooding with it. 1993 was a flood because of the releases from Tuttle Creek. So in my opinion, we should work hard to do just as the caller said, is move out of the valley and up into the hills as best we can, and let the river or let the creek go back to where the creek wants to be and let it flow naturally instead of thinking we can engineer a way around it.
All right. And with that, I think it's time for a break. And speaking of all those mitigation efforts, that's a good segue into probably what we'll be talking to after the break.
Great.
All right. We'll have more after the break. You're listening to In Focus on News Radio KMAN.
ESB Financial, member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender, has new solutions.